Why, yes, we are joined every Thursday on the Sports Ticket, thanks to Anderson Insurance Agency, as you heard, by the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, Brian Haney. And we always appreciate Brian joining us. And it's even, I'm sure, harder for him to join us when, you know, coming off a loss, that's tough. But also, you get back late on a road trip, and Brian's got some sleep to catch up on, I'm sure. And you'd be feeling a little bit better if KU would have won last night, obviously. But as my parents said a long time ago, you can't win them all. And I tell my kids, you can't win them all. And you got a target on your back when you're a really good team. And what we've seen here in the last 48 hours is four of the top five teams in the country lose, all on the road to conference opponents who were unranked. There seems to be a bit of a pattern and a trend here. And last night, KU up by as many as 16. I thought they were going to cruise and win. And then Central Florida threw the zone on them. And next thing you know, Kansas struggled, and they come away with a loss. Are you surprised at what took place last night?
I think we have to be surprised because, you know, this is Kansas, and they usually find ways to fight through some of that adversity. And, you know, obviously, Hunter Dickinson wasn't at 100%. We found that out during pregame. He banged knees, apparently, a couple of days prior with someone in the post. And, you know, they knew he wasn't going to be on his normal workload or at his normal ability level, but you'd like to think you'd find a way to win that game. So frustrating, disappointing, surprising, yes, all of the above. Does it make you feel a little better that number one, number two, number five, they all lost as well? Sure. But the bottom line is, if the expectation for Kansas is to win the Big 12, that's a game you'd love to have back, because while UCF is certainly well-coached and very capable, and they had some athletic bigs that gave us fits, and as you said, the zone they threw at us really flummoxed the Kansas offense for large stretches of the second half. Having said all of that, it's still a team that, more times than not, your competition for the Big 12 title is going to beat them. So we gave a stroke back to the field. We tried to use the golf metaphor last night. That's like bogey in a hole where some other teams might par. I don't think UCF's even close to as bad as they were on Saturday night at Kansas State, but we probably caught them on a peak night last night, too. The truth is somewhere in between, but that's one of those games that, man, yeah, I suppose everybody else is losing this week, but that's one you'll look back on 2 months from now and think, boy, did we ever give one back that night. And that's no disrespect at all to Central Florida at all. I think the world of Johnny Dawkins, I think, through the portal, they've built something, you know, that is going to be competitive in his first year in the league. And they just had an NBA lottery pick last year, by the way. So they've got a nice program. But, you know, if Kansas is truly a national championship contender, that's going to be one that sticks out like a sore thumb a couple of months from now. And so this team needs to find a way to regroup and bounce back against an angry Oklahoma team that just lost on the road to TCU last night. And that, by the way, makes Saturday's TCU game that we barely escaped in look a little more understandable. You know, when TCU controls the Oklahoma game last night and hands the Sooners a loss. But it's also a reminder of just how tough this league is, and that we're a whisker away from being 0-2 right now. So every night's going to be a dogfight. Every game's going to be a challenge. And certainly it's understandable you lose on the road when everybody else is, but when the expectation is so high here, I'm just telling you what Bill Self would say. I'm not saying anything critical at all. He told us in pregame last night, this is one of these games we have to win, you know, based on how tough the schedule is, 1 through 18 over the next 9 weeks. This is one of those games you can't afford to let slip through your grasp, but unfortunately Kansas did.
Yeah, they did. A couple things I want to get to. You mentioned the struggles against the zone. They had said on the TV broadcast that they only seen like 30 plays of zone this year. So that obviously hurt Kansas. And my oldest son says, listen, Kansas doesn't have a great three-point shooting. They're not a great three-point shooting team. I said, well, McCullough shot the ball well. Harris shoots the ball pretty well when he elects to shoot the ball. You know, Furphy, I think, can be a good outside shooter. But I understand that there's not a guy you just sit there and go, he's a three-point specialist. You know, you don't think of anybody on this team like you did with, you know, Grady Dick last year, whoever the case may be. So I thought it was smart by Central Florida to throw the zone at Kansas, and obviously it worked. May not work if they played them again tomorrow, but it did work last night. I think the other thing that's really alarming is the turnovers. That's two straight games now where Kansas has had a buttload of turnovers. TCU was way too many turnovers. They got away with it, luckily. And then last night, 18 more turnovers. I would imagine that is something that has the coach's attention.
Yeah, it's 18 in both games, which is about six too many. And Bill Self talked about that in pregame, talking about, you know, what good teams typically are able to do. And you know, he talked about how versus TCU, they did a really good job against a team that typically is able to get defensive rebounds, get it and go, and not allow the number one transition offense in the country to score in the fast break off of Kansas miss. What they did allow them to do is score in the fast break off live ball turnovers, and that obviously was a big reason why TCU almost won. And then obviously, you know, you take a look at it a little bit further, the extra possessions you're giving away. If they had six fewer turnovers in each of these two games, I'm just going back to TCU because this is the conversation Bill and I had prior to last night. But if you had six fewer turnovers in each of those games, and let's just say you score on half of those extra possessions, well, then you probably win last night since it was a five-point loss, and TCU isn't a nail-biter late. And that's just conservatively speaking, just don't throw the ball away. So he is, to answer your question, very well aware of it and very frustrated by it. And I don't think they expected at all to have an 18-turnover game last night after the 18 turnovers that they just pointed out to the guys on Saturday versus TCU and really had emphasized heading in. But there's another team that has really quick guards and athletic bigs. And you hate to say it, but athleticism gives this Kansas team fits right now.
Yes.
And we talked back in August that, you know, they were going to have one of their fastest teams ever, but obviously one player from that preseason roster is no longer on the team, Arterio Morris, which affected the athleticism a lot. And then the other super fast guy right now is really struggling with his confidence. And Coach Self, I think, is having a hard time trusting anybody for that fifth spot in the rotation. Marco Jackson has had back-to-back scoreless games. And the troubling thing about last night was after an 0-for-4 with 0 points versus TCU, it was an 0-for-0. And there wasn't anything attempted last night, which tells me he's really in his head. He's trying not to make mistakes. He's turning down, you know, the types of plays that you know he has the God-given ability to make just with his sheer speed and explosiveness. But right now he's so afraid of making a mistake. And honestly, you know, Self has had such a quick hook with all these guys trying to push the right buttons, trying to get something to work that, you know, right now, I think for Johnny Furphy and El Marco and Nick and all that, there's been so many efforts to get somebody going that I think they're probably all a little in their heads right now knowing, you know, I better not mess up or I'm coming out. And that's, again, not being critical at all. It's trying to figure out the right combinations for Kansas, Bill Self is. And in the process, you're dealing with two kids, and they are kids. You know, Johnny's case reclassified, came in a year early. Omarco's only been playing organized ball for 4.5 years. Nick is the one that, as a fifth-year senior and an older guy, that you really hope will be able to settle in and have a little more consistency than what we've shown. But the guy with the highest ceiling of those three is probably Johnny. And we saw in the first half last night, he had 7 points and a big stretch that really sparked Kansas. And it wasn't too long ago we were saying the same thing about El Marco, but that was versus a Wichita State team that isn't on the same plane as what we're seeing now in league play. But you'll recall El Marco in that game had a 7-0 personal run that sparked a 33-7 run by Kansas that blew the game open. And it's in there with him. It's in there with Johnny, but you're going to have growing pains when you're dealing with two guys that are that young. And I know you're probably thinking, but Brian, the other four guys are all so good. I mean, does the fifth position matter that much if it's a weak link? Well, it kind of does because, as you pointed out, you want to have another three-point shooter because it does so much for spacing the floor and being a threat both inside and out. And Kevin's been way better. Juwan is capable. But, man, we had Grady Dick last year.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that could hit five threes on any given night. You just don't have that with this team. And if your fifth player out there on the floor isn't even a threat to attack, which I felt like last night at times DelMarco just looked tentative. It really does start to become a weak link that can break the chain. And so here we are getting set for game three in league play in what is absolutely a marathon, not a sprint. And in Bill we trust because he's the best in the business and he always gets his guys rounded into form come February. But that's a very real concern right now because I think the confidence of DelMarco right now is very much, you know, day-to-day. And Johnny is still learning fast on the job and trying to settle in, but self at times, you know, can be frustrated with where he's at. And then Nick is just the consummate, you know, case of a guy that clearly has the ability. And he's a great kid, and he's working so hard. He just some days gets in there and feels comfortable, and other days he fumbles the ball on a lob down the floor on a wide-open transition play like last night, and you understand why Coach Self is putting his hands on his head and looking up at the heavens. He's got three guys, but right now he can't get any one of them to sustain it consistently, and he's just got to find a winning combination of coaching these guys up and getting them to settle in and not overthink, because I don't think at this point anybody's being added to this roster mid-season, so you've got to go with what you got. And that's, even though you've heard this for 2 months now, it's blaring louder than ever, that fifth spot and getting consistency right there is looming as large as anything as to whether or not this is a national title contending team or a Sweet 16 Elite 8 type team. Hey, they should still be one of the team's favorite to go to Phoenix because you've got two potential All-Americans. But, you know, I think this is one of those cases where it's not as far as saying you're only as strong as your weakest link, but the weakest link could get you beat unless you develop a little bit more consistency at that spot. I hope that makes sense.
No, it does. It makes perfect sense to me. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, every Thursday brought to you here on the Sports Ticket by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky at 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. You know, you mentioned Jackson. He didn't attempt a shot last night. to me, this team has such a slim margin of error. And the reason I say that is because of what you just alluded to, the fifth starter or not getting a lot off your bench. But I'll take it one step further. DeJuan Harris is not a score first point guard. He wants to distribute, wants to pass the ball, and that is terrific if you have enough offensive weapons on your team. But if Jackson's not looking to shoot and Timberlake's struggling and Furphy is not hitting shots, DeJuan Harris has to score more. And I know Bill Self has talked about how he has to score more. But, you know, we're watching the game last night when we got back. There was a few. He had open looks and he would not take the shot. And if I were an opposing coach and I'm looking at the scouting report for Kansas, I'm sitting here saying, okay, first of all, zone's not a bad idea until they prove they can knock him down. Two, if I know Jackson's struggling and he's not confident and he's not going to take shots, then I'm gonna make Harris into a scorer. As a defensive team, I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to take away McCullough if I can. I'm going to definitely take away Dickinson, especially if I have athletic bigs, which Central Florida had last night. And I'm going to make DeJuan Harris into a scorer. And if he ends up scoring 20 and beating us, then kudos to DeJuan Harris. But I know in the scouting report, that's not his MO. That's not really who he is. We will dare him to shoot threes. Yes, he can shoot them very well, but will he actually take the shot? And if he is tentative to actually take shots offensively, and Jackson is tentative to take shots, now you've got 5-on-3 when it comes to five defenders guarding basically three offensive players. And in fairness, on top of that, KJ Adams doesn't really, I mean, you don't see him hitting shots outside of 15 feet. So McCullough's really your only pretty good threat guy that's willing to chuck it up there from three-point land. What about that room for error? Because, you know, I hate to see it for Harris. I'm not blaming Harris for it because he is what he is, and it's worked out great. But he doesn't have Grady Dick to throw the ball to, you know, on a fast break or a wide-open spot up three. Now, maybe Furphy's going to be that guy. Maybe Timberlake's going to be that guy. I'm not writing off KU and saying that this team is not going to get better. But this KU team, to me, Brian, and I keep, like, holding my breath every time DeJuan Harris hits the floor, every time Kevin McCullough hits the floor, or every time Hunter Dickinson hits the floor. This team is one sprained ankle away from being, I think, in some big-time trouble.
Yeah, it's fair. All that is accurate, and I don't really really disagree with anything. I think you laid it out really well, and it's one of those deals where you thought you had firepower in Timberlake, and he can still emerge as some sort of threat, but I don't think he's going to be the Remy Martin late season addition, because Remy was an alpha personality that had 2,000 career points in the Pac-12, you know, and had been a first-team all Pac-12, Pac-12 player of the year type candidate guy coming in. It's a big leap between Towson and the Big 12 compared to Arizona State and the Big 12. And I don't see Nick as that same alpha personality. Mm-mm. So why did I go straight to him off of your comment about Juan? Because if there's going to be another assertive outside threat emerge, it has to be Nick. It could be Johnny to a certain degree, but coaches will tell you that Johnny's preference and where he really excels is in the slashing driving game, even as a 6'8 guy. We've seen a pure stroke from him from three, but that's not his bread and butter. And as you saw last night, it's not super consistent. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll do things in practice where if they run good offense and a guy misses the shot, but the offense otherwise was well executed, they got the ball to three sides, they got the spot they wanted, and the shot was missed, Billsup will say, get it back to him, shoot it again. And if he misses, everybody's just standing around at this point watching. Get it back to him. Shoot it again. Get it back to him. Shoot it again. Mm-hmm. And he does this with everybody, right? Because he wants the guy to see the ball go through the hole. And some guys, it takes more time alone than others to finally hit the shot and move on to the next play. But there were a couple the day before the game, we were practicing down in Orlando, where Johnny wasn't in the vicinity of the cylinder and told him that. And I think it just goes to show you, he's a guy that's still developing that as his secondary scoring weapon. He's a good shooter, not a great shooter yet. Mm-hmm. Whereas Svee, everybody wants to compare him to Svee. Svee, that was always his calling card, right? Grady Dick, that was always his calling card. So I give you that behind the curtain just to say, I think he's a good shooter, has a chance to be a very good shooter within this season. He could turn into a great shooter over the course of his Kansas career. But you're talking about how does this team get better in the next 2 months. And, yes, DeJuan has to look to score more. And last night, 2 of 8 and 0 of 3 from 3 isn't going to cut it. But you need him to stay aggressive and be a little bit more formidable. But other than that, one of those other options that we've talked about has to emerge as a more consistent, you know, respected gun on the wing. And to me, it's got to be Timberlake. But you don't want to sell false hope that it's going to turn into a Remy Martin late season type injection of offense, because I think they're different players. So the point is, can you get formidable at that fifth spot? And then, as you said, get a little more out of DeJuan, which honestly starts with being a little more careful with the ball. Mm-hmm. As much as we want him to be the scorer that you've described, and I agree with all that, probably priority number one right now is getting the turnovers down, because he was tops in the league in assist to turnover ratio the last 2 years, and this year it's been not close to that. And obviously Kevin made a lot of mistakes with the ball last night too, and he's probably forcing the issue because he feels like he has to right now. And Self would also tell you that these guys are all playing 3 or 4 more minutes a game than they probably should, and some of this is the product of that.
Yep.
But first off, for Juan, handle the ball better. Secondly, as you said, be a little bit more of a threat to score. But then, call it like it is, you know, one of those three other options, you know, combining for that fifth starter spot has to be formidable. Otherwise, you know, the defense is going to clamp down around Hunter. They're going to be able to fixate on Kevin, and you just don't have that balance. And as you termed it, with margin for error, and that's a great term too, it makes you beatable, quite frankly, a little vulnerable, unless you get a little more formidable there. So hopefully we see it emerge. I'm not saying that Nick needs to go all of a sudden to A-plus status, or Johnny needs to shoot like a lottery pick or anything like that, but be enough of a threat that they have to respect it, because that's going to make it so much easier for the other 4 guys on the floor.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, doesn't get any easier to take on Oklahoma. You mentioned they'll be smarting after that loss It's interesting. You got two top 10 teams, both coming off losses. KU, of course, to Central Florida last night, ranked number 3, and Oklahoma ranked number 9. Your thoughts on the Sooners? They come to town for a 1 p.m. tip-off this Saturday.
Well, heck of a coaching job that Porter Mosier's done here to start the year. That was just their second loss of the season last night, and they climbed up to number 9 in both polls prior to that. So you got two top 10 teams coming off losses, and I'll have a chance to do a deeper dive into some of their film, but I know McCollum's had a great, great year for him as a top scorer at 15 a game, and we're seeing a little bit more athletic Oklahoma team than what they had a year ago. So definitely excited to see how Kansas matches up, but you know, to be honest, we got in at 2:30 in the morning, and so I haven't begun to put my board together beyond the big picture stuff, but definitely excited for it, and yet this was not a game when the schedule came out that you circled as one of the marquee conference home games, because they were picked toward the bottom of the league. But some of these new faces have really mixed in well, and you know, you've got McCollum and Oway combining for about 30 points a game, and so there's going to be a lot for Kansas to adjust to there compared to, you know, what it's looked like the last couple of years. And I think for these Jayhawks, you heard Bill Self say it in his post game last night, it's rare that in the second week of league play you're talking about a must-win game, but this kind of feels like that for Kansas. So let's hope that they can, you know, regroup. And you don't want to lean on the building and the history in the building and all that, because that can make you complacent. But there's no doubt it's probably worth 7 or 8 points a game playing at Allen Fieldhouse. Let's hope that the veterans on this team, the magic in that building, and the pedigree of our Hall of Fame coach get Kansas up off the mat, because Self rarely ever loses back-to-back games. And this is one that feels like you got to go out and win it to make sure you're not putting yourself in too deep of a hole. I don't know if folks will say, hey, Houston's already got a loss. A lot of teams already have a loss. But here's the deal, man. Like I said, that loss coming against who it did, that was giving a stroke back to the field yesterday. So you need to find a way to steal a stroke back. Go birdie a tough hole.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you'll start to feel a little bit more on pace. And I think that's the key for Kansas on Saturday.
I agree with you. All right, time for the off-the-wall question for the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney. You were in Orlando, obviously. That's where Central Florida's campus is. And Orlando is also the home to Disney World. I sometimes get confused between where Disneyland and Disney World are, but I did get it right last night, and then I checked my notes. I'm like, all right, I finally didn't get it confused. Disney World is in Orlando, so that leads us to the off-the-wall question. What's the best amusement ride that Brian Haney's ever been on? What's the best amusement ride you've ever ridden?
Wow. You know, it's been so long since I've ridden one. Mm-hmm. That's hard to say. Gosh dang, it's been 30 years. You know, I've done Six Flags in St. Louis and Dallas. I've done, obviously, World of Fun in Kansas City. And I've been to Disneyland and Disney World. It's been so long, though. I want to say, at the time, and maybe it was in Dallas, but I rode the Texas Giants or something like that. And okay, it was the steepest drop of its kind at the time. But keep in mind, this is 25, 30 years ago, so I'm sure it's since been surpassed. But I remember it felt like conquering some fears, getting on that, knowing that was going to be as steep a drop as anything, because I've not been a huge fan of heights in my life, even though I've gone skydiving and ziplining and that kind of thing. So that's probably my favorite. But again, I'm a rough guy to ask that question to, because I've been out of the circuit on the theme park front as someone that doesn't have kids for about 30 years now. But how about you? What's your favorite?
You know, I always liked the, what was it called? We went to the fairs a lot. So there was they called it either the octopus or the spider. I don't know if you've seen that. So it's like there's 8 different cars you're in, and it goes up in the air and they slings you all over the place. I like that one. But once I got older, anything that made me kind of disoriented or, you know, was like spinning made me sick, where I had to just like, I had to eliminate that. Have you ever had a ride that made you want to go up, chuck, or hurl?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the second word you mentioned there, so they used to have something called the Tilt-A-Whirl.
Yes.
But they somewhat not so affectionately referred to it as the Tilt-A-Hurl.
Yes.
Because it gets you spinning. And my story, you didn't know you were stepping in this. You're going to regret asking this question.
I don't want to literally step in what you're talking about, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but that's exactly where I'm going with it. my story. I was at a fair in Topeka as a high school kid, and we were on the Tilt-A-Whirl, and somebody, not me, in a different car, puked.
Oh God!
And it went straight out.
Oh
but
no!
Keep in mind, it's throwing you around. You're sliding into that hole.
Oh yes.
As it you know spins you around. So, in terms of like where the vomit went, it went 3 feet directly out. But by the time it flew through the air, my car was spinning into that slot, and I just remember almost like a paintball gun that just gets like machine gun across your chest. Almost like a sprinkler in your lawn that goes from side to side. I just got crushed with that puke from left to right, shoulder blade to shoulder blade. And then it's sitting on you and you're smelling it. And next thing you know, it's like, oh gosh, I'm going to puke.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that's why they call it the Tilt-A-Whirl. And I tried to avoid that story, but man, you took me down memory lane and brought up something that I'd almost been able to successfully forget.
I rode the Tilt-A-Whirl many times when I was younger, and it was fine. And I got older. Last time I rode it, I felt very sick, and I got off. I don't know if I ended up throwing up somewhere, but I got off. I never have actually, you know, puked on a ride. But obviously, there are many people that have, and you, unfortunately for you, you had to deal with the remnants of that. That is, wow. They should have refunded your ticket for the ride, don't you think?
Oh, man. You could see the carnival workers just laughing because they'd seen it far too many times to be surprised, you know. And I think I learned something scientifically, you know, about the gravitational pull.
Yes.
And you know, where if puke goes here, but you slide into that spot, you know, just based on whether the ride works mechanically, then you should expect to get hit. And I got doused, and not in a good way.
I just want to add one more thing. So I have kids, okay? If you have kids, you have to, they get sick, okay? And you know my wife, you've met my family, and I'm going to tell you what, my wife is an absolute trooper, and I think moms are immune to this, but dads are absolutely the biggest wimps in the world, and I am one of the biggest wimps in the world. I've had my kids puke on the bathroom floor before. They've missed their target in the toilet in regards to throwing up or didn't get there. And one time, actually it was recently, my middle child, he had puked a little bit in his bed. And I actually was able to clean that up because it wasn't a ton of it, thank God. But I'm going to tell you something. I anytime I see it or I smell it, I immediately feel like I'm going to do it. And yet, wives, mothers out there, women out there, God bless you, somehow go into it and just absolutely are immune from it. And I guess it's because they've done it so many times because us guys are wimps and we somehow collectively go to the other bathroom because, you know what, suddenly I got to do number one or number two because I don't want to deal with cleanup in the other bathroom. I just, that is one of the worst smells of all time. I just can't deal with it.
It is, and it's as infectious in sparking future of that as laughter or something else is, you know. A little bit of it, and next thing you know, it's a domino effect.
Well, we didn't know where that question was going to take us, but it took us down a very, very weird path, to say the least. Hey, man, I appreciate your time. What's that?
Don't make a promo out of that.
No, that one's going to stay in the vault. I can assure you of that. No doubt. Hey, man, thanks for the time. I know you're a little short on sleep. Get some rest the best you can. And luckily, the next game's at home against Oklahoma. We'll be listening. Thanks for all your time, as always. And we'll talk to you again next Thursday.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks so much. Talk to you next week.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, who, like me, is not a big fan of those rides anymore, it sounds like. And our chat with the voice of the Jayhawks every single week, win or lose for KU, is brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Millen Boulevard, or call them at 738-5701. Sports Ticket is always brought to you each and every day here on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com by our good friends over at Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair.